Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dribble Podcast. My name is Craig O'Donoghue from the West Australian newspaper, and throughout this summer, I'm bringing you all the news and interviews for everything to do with basketball in WA. We've just had a weekend where the Perth Wildcats' six-game winning streak came to an end, and one where the Perth Lynx produced a comeback for the ages. We are edging towards that time of year where the NBL disappears from Perth, and Friday night's game between the Wildcats and Tasmania will be the last time we will see them at RAC Arena until January 13. That's the reality of tennis taking over RAC Arena for an extended period at this time of year, which means it's a good time to talk about how to handle that. So, what time is it? It's Trevor time.
He can handle the ball from the perimeter, which is rare for a seven-footer. There's such a huge upside of him that the NBA teams are drooling over. But I think there's room in there to play a cup mid-year and have the games count. I think my next event will probably be overseas.
Trevor Gleeson, welcome back to the Dribble Podcast.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
It's getting that time, isn't it? It's amazing. Now, another coach has been sacked since we last saw you.
I see that.
Any phone calls, any interest?
No, Santa's gone quiet on that front, so see what the new year brings in. But no, all good. Eventful week last week, and even a player got sacked.
Yeah, it's amazing how everything happens at once, isn't it?
Yeah.
But we're here for you to talk about travel and the challenges that it faces for the Wildcats at this time of year. It was Hopman Cup when you were coaching. Now it's the United Cup, but it's still tennis.
Right.
So the Wildcats can't play at home at any time during that time. So they will play Melbourne. They play in Melbourne on December 23. They've got Cairns on Boxing Day. They've got Adelaide on December 28. Then a gap before New Zealand on January 7. So it's not simple. How did you handle being away for extended periods, knowing you were going to have away game after away game after away game?
Yeah. It's something that you're used to over here in Perth. You know you're going to get caned at the travel at some time, and normally around the Christmas period is that. But, you know, there's two ways you look at it. You can look at it, complain it, and maybe what Adelaide should have done last week, or accept it and use it to your advantage. And we used to do that. We used to build the camaraderie out there, you know, have some fun things along the way that you're making that trip eventful. All the guys that sit together at the airport and we'd have our little meetings and team dinners and team jokes. And there's a lot of things that you can do on the road that you can't do at home, and use that travel for that advantage.
So are you a salesman at that time of year really as well, trying to make them buy into the fact that this can be fun, this isn't going to be arduous, it's not going to be difficult, we're going to enjoy the moment?
No, a part of it is accepting the adversity, accepting that you're going to be away for 7 days, accepting, you know, COVID, we're over for a month, and we stayed at a hotel and all the power went out. And so the guys came out and played hide and seek. 7 footers playing hide and seek. It was quite hilarious. But that accepting the adversity, because you can build on that to build a team camaraderie. You build the toughness, you build the togetherness, you build the unity, and you add that adversity, it comes later on in the finals. You're going to get hit by adversity somewhere. Use that time to say, hey, this is a really good challenge for us. See if we can build and make ourselves stronger. Instead of looking at it, oh, it's negative. Oh, I've got to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and get the airport. Oh, we've got to get there. I used to try to put the team through adversity in pre-season. Like, we would have 3 games in 3 days, and they finish at 10 o'clock at night, and they've got to play at 12 the next day. And I said, I know you're tired, I know you're hurt, but what I want to do is I want to see you respond, because that's going to happen through the course. And when it happens later on, you can build on it. So you remember that time that we traveled for a week, okay, and we got through it and we got so many wins. Now's the time. We're in the finals now. We've got the semifinals. We go straight on the travel. So you've got something to build on for the future.
So how important, you were used to it and Damo was used to it and Jesse was used to it, then you're bringing in players each year who are doing it for the first time. How important is it to get that message in early that this is going to come and that you guys have done it before and that it's not going to be as big a problem as what those new guys would perceive in their own minds?
Yeah, well, you would mention it and say, hey, this period of time here, this is tough. You might have 7 games in 15 days and 6 flights and to go through that period of time. And I remember that happened for us in the finals, and then the toughest period that we had for travel was go to New Zealand for the final. We played on a Wednesday night here, Friday night New Zealand, back here Sunday afternoon, And the guys are tired. I knew it was tired, but we built through the year that we could face this. We know it's going to be tough. You know you're going to be tired, but we produce when we're tired. This is our best. There's the other team. And we were fortunate to win that third game by 30, I think, to win that championship. But that's you're selling and you're enforcing positive reinforcements that this can help you down the track.
So there's a really interesting scenario that the Wildcats got at the moment. They're going to take family and friends, not friends, family members over to Melbourne for Christmas because it means that they can all be together and they won't have to come home. And I look at your 2019-20 year as a great example of having to make decisions around when you come home. So you flew to Sydney on December 27. Right. You play on December 28 and win. You fly home on December 29 so the players can have one day with their families and then leave again December 31. Then you're in January 1, you're away. You stay away until January 5 and then come home. So making the decision between staying away and coming home for one day or 2 days, how much planning went in around those sorts of calls?
Yeah, it's the totality of the road trips. And I was always a fan of getting to sleep in your own bed as much as possible, and especially with family have young kids. Okay, one day for young kids seems like a week, you know, and it's you go away and the kids can't walk, and then you come back and they're walking and talking. It feels like that when you're on the road. So I was any time that we could get back home, and obviously with the flights, you know, it has to match up. There's no use having fatigue and then you get home at 9 p.m. and out at 6 p.m. in the morning. It's when it works well, and if there's enough time to rest and some down period, I think it's invaluable to sleep in your own bed.
You think it'd be great for them to have their families over there? They're going to go over for the December 23 game. They'll be together for Christmas Eve as a group, together for Christmas Day, train Christmas Day. Then the families will fly home and they'll fly off to Cairns. So do you think that just having the 36 people together in the one location is a great idea?
Yeah, it's a great initiative. I really like it. It's something, especially that travel time that you're traveling on Christmas Day. You know, that's tough. We trained a couple of times on Christmas morning, then flew the next day to play, like you said, on the 27th. So it's a tough period. We used to have it off, but the reality is now we've got two NBL games on Christmas. So you're going to be playing on Christmas here real soon. So it's something a little bit different than America, where America's seen the Christmas Day game is the number one game on TV.
It's a different culture, isn't it? Altogether, like up until last year, we didn't have any Christmas sport, and now the NBL is starting to build. It was one game last year, two games this year. What are your thoughts on it? Do you think it's something that's going to build within Australia, or are we too different to the US?
Well, it's the weather in the US. I used to coach Sioux Falls Skyforce in the CBA, now the D League or G League, and our biggest game was Christmas Day because a lot of Americans have their Christmas on Christmas Eve. And the families get together, and virtually you're snowed in, especially in the Midwest. It's cold, it's wet, and by 4 o'clock Christmas Day, they're ready to get out of the house, and they can't be like us to go down the beach, have a barbecue, go around your mate's place. You're very much confined with the weather, and that was our biggest game. We would get 6,500 people and be sold out, you know, a month beforehand. But in the NBA, that's like a marquee game. If you are playing one of those Christmas Day of games, that's classed as you're an elite team. You are number one in the ratings. And teams like to play on Christmas Day in the NBA. It's a little bit different culture for us over here.
So you didn't get involved in any Christmas Day games while you were over there in your 2 years. I think you were December 23, your last game for both of them. And then I think 27th to 28th sort of time. Did you how did you spend Christmas once you were there? Given you weren't actually with your family and you weren't with your team.
Yeah, it's tough. It really is. It's, you're away from your loved ones, and especially that Christmas, it's a real killer. I guess it was 12 hours of difference, so we kind of worked out that it was, you know, 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. It was 7 p.m. Christmas Eve, so we got to open presents up by FaceTime. And that way, but it's not the same. So you get through it somehow, but mate, in the NBA, every day just melts into the next. It's, you know, you're either working, there's very rarely a day off. And if you have a day off, you better get ahead of the game. So if something happens that you're organized. So different kettle of fish, but, you know, I'm happy the Wildcats are taking their family. I think that's a great, great move. And thinking about that process to make a more family club, especially with young kids involved. But yeah, different from the NBA. And we see that creeping in over here. So it'll be interesting to see how the ratings are.
I found it really interesting last year. So my daughter tested positive to COVID on Christmas morning.
Oh, there you go.
So I was at home with her. The rest of the family went out with the extended family. And I'm sitting at home going, "What?" I watched Top Gun. I watched Top Gun Maverick. And then I watched the basketball. And I thought it was great that you could do that. So there is a market, I think, for people who have smaller families. Like you're over here with your extended family in Melbourne. So how big's your event going to be this year as an example?
Yeah, well, look, I don't know. I haven't been home for 2 years for Christmas. So, yeah, it's normally we're just home, family, and then go down the beach and catch up with some family friends. And our family don't get too much together. We're all over Australia, living all over Australia. So very rarely that happens, especially with, my parents passing. But it's going to be interesting to see how that eventuates in the sport, as it looks like got a little bit of momentum with the NBL playing Christmas Day. Now they're putting two games on. Will they put a Christmas Eve game on next year and, you know, have it like a Christmas period that you have a lots of merry atmosphere for the games? I think it's a great initiative.
Yes, they've got the Christmas Eve, they've got the two Christmas Day, and they've got Boxing Day at the moment. The question is how far you have to travel, I think. So Melbourne went to Sydney last year, now it's Sydney versus Illawarra. Southeast Melbourne copped the travel side of things this year. You mentioned that you've got situations in the past where you trained Christmas Day. Was it well accepted, just even the training part of things?
No. Yeah. It was. It's something that you have to. We can't jump on and not train. You're not training on the day that you travel, especially from Perth. It might be different from your Melbourne to Sydney, where it's an hour flight. From Perth, it's 5 hours. So you're not training on game day, not training on the travel day. And if you don't train the day before you travel, so you haven't trained for 2 days leading into a game. It's just, especially basketball, needs a ball in your hand just to keep your hand-eye coordination sharp. And that was more so, hey, listen, we got to do it. I don't like doing it, but it's a part of it. Let's be professional, come in here and get our work done in an hour and a half, go back, and then we can have Christmas, you know, with our families.
As you said, the Wildcats will take everyone over. How do you think they'll handle the whole, it's unique having to have the families there and prepare for a game. Have you had that before? We've had everyone on the road together?
Well, normally in the finals, most of the family come in, but we kind of travelled separate. It was just to keep our focus. You know, with the championship that we won in Melbourne, a lot of the families came over to watch that game four in Melbourne. And it was great to celebrate with them. It was, you know, the championship we won on the road, much rather winning championship here in Perth. But it was great for them to be there and us to share that moment with them. And I think this is a great thing that you have a Christmas. I remember that Christmas we went for the Wildcats and went to get over. What I don't like is they're on commercial airlines. You know, and the NBA, you got your private jets and everything goes to when you're ready. Over here, there's problems. And, you know, all of a sudden you're traveling with 50 people. The logistics can cause a bit of an issue.
Yeah, and the commercial airlines was the reason why Adelaide had so many problems. They couldn't fly direct to New Zealand. They had to fly, I think, came back via Sydney as well. So they were all over the place. So it's not simple when you're travelling around the world or interstate trying to get these sorts of flights organised, is it?
And that's what I mean. That builds resilience. That builds adversity, you know. So if it does happen in the final, that, hey, listen, we missed our flight, we don't fly, you know, those little things can't upset your performance. So it's a positive way that you can look at it as well.
Wildcats lost on the weekend. Obviously, their six games streak over. Did you watch much of the game yet? What were your thoughts?
I thought the Hawks were outstanding. I thought they played like men. They've been missing that. I was really impressed with how they played. Probably they did catch the Perth team off guard in that first quarter. They did fight back and got it to single figures a couple of times. But there wasn't enough juice in the tank to get it. So that was maybe a little bit of good wake-up call for them. They won six in a row and kind of got easy. And now you get beaten by the bottom team. It might just get that, hey, let's get focused. And this week's game is a huge one.
Certainly massive weekend for them. Good to see you before Christmas. We won't be seeing you until after Christmas now. Obviously a bit of a break for the producers as they head off. So we'll look forward to seeing you in the new year. But if anyone does want to get in touch with Trev and get him to do corporate speaking about what it takes to be successful, trevorgleeson.com, isn't it?
It certainly is.
And Did you like wrestling when you were growing up? Are you a wrestling fan?
I did watch when I was a kid, probably the Hulk Hogan era, probably a little bit before that, before your time, but
Well, wrestlers are coming to town in February with the Elimination Chamber, and I'm lucky enough to catch up with Rhea Ripley in a couple of days' time and her Judgment Day colleague, Dominic Mysterio. So if you like your basketball, if you like your wrestling, we'll be having some more podcasts in the coming days about wrestling as well. So Hulk Hogan, not Hulk Hogan anymore. It's about the women's champion and Dominic Mysterio from Judgment Day. I'm so damn excited about this.
I like the name of it, Elimination Chamber.
Elimination Chamber. It's going to be fair income, unbelievable. It's going to be great. Thanks for coming in. Enjoy your Christmas.
No worries. Cheers.
Kicks out to Atwell. Atwell to tie the game. Amy Atwell goes bang. McDonald has been the one. Step back triple. McDonald, as sweet as you like. And somehow the Perth Lynx have come away from Adelaide with a victory.
Perth Lynx produced an early Christmas miracle on Sunday when they fought back from 20 points down to beat Adelaide Lightning. Aaron McDonald was fair income unbelievable with 35 points, and the Lynx can now prepare to face Sydney Flames on Wednesday night. And one of the features of that match will be more than 100 of WA's best female athletes throwing their support behind the team by attending the game. They include captains from the Fremantle Dockers, West Coast Eagles and Perth Glory. There'll be Hockey Roos stars, players from the Western Force and the Wheelcats, and some of the biggest names from the West Australian Institute of Sport. It is an important time for the club as their licence issue continues to revolve around, and that was highlighted by a visit from the head of the WNBL, Christy Collier-Hill, for last week's home game against Melbourne. I caught up with Christy at that game to discuss the Lynx and the league. So we're here with Christy Collier-Hill. Nice to see you in Perth.
It's lovely to be here, talking face to face.
Where do you see the league being at right now?
Yeah, look, I think I was chatting to somebody earlier today and saying it's been a fantastic start to the season. Off the back of a couple of really challenging seasons with COVID and significant broadcast issues last year. Touch wood, the season itself is really running along nicely. There's some really good things happening. We're seeing record crowds across the league. So after the first four rounds, we had more people through the doors watching the WNBL than ever before in the history of the league. So it looks like we're set for a record-breaking season in terms of crowd numbers across the league. That is down to probably a few really successful clubs that are getting sold out stadiums consistently for their home games. So that's a really positive thing. But I think from a fan perspective, the most exciting thing this year is the competitiveness of the eight teams. The ladder is what the ladder is, but what we can see is every team competes, and even the Canberra Capitals, who at this stage haven't won a game, they'll win games, and they may beat the team that's first or the team that's second. So that highly competitive nature of the league is absolutely what fans want to see. So that's been a really great thing. And then the third thing I think I would just mention is the quality of international players in the league this season. And we do say this every season, but gee whiz, we've got some absolute crackers and they are phenomenal to watch. They lift the league and it's really exciting to have them here. So I think we're in a good place, touch wood, so far this season.
It does feel like, from the outside looking in, that there's clubs with haves and there's clubs with have-nots. And it's have crowds, have money, and there's don't have as much money and don't have as many crowds. And whilst it's competitive on the court, it's not necessarily as competitive off the court. Is that a concern that there's a gap between who's turning up and who has the money to spend?
They're probably two separate things, but you're probably right. There is a bit of a perception of the clubs of the haves and the haves not. I think it is a bit more perception than reality. And the reason I say that is because there is, when we talk about teams and rosters and how clubs can contract, there are some parameters for that. So there is a salary cap and there is a salary floor. So all clubs are required to be within that range, which isn't a very big range. Some will be at the higher end, of course, and some will be at the lower end. If clubs go over that salary cap, because it is a soft cap, it's a luxury tax and it's redistributed, which it doesn't look like any teams will be over the salary cap this year. So that probably gives you an indication of, I suppose, the evenness of the rostering. And then in terms of the crowds, when you think of the perception of the clubs, the haves and the have-nots, I don't think the crowds are indicative of that. I think, for example, Canberra, who are bottom of the ladder at the moment, no wins. They're selling out their stadium every home game they have, and their aim is to sell out their stadium every home game this season. So they are really, really proactive in the community. They've obviously been around a very long time and are really strong in having that as the focal point of their club, which is engaging with their fans and getting them into the stadium. I'm not suggesting the other clubs aren't doing that. Some areas are simply more challenging than others. You look at the Bendigo Spirit, who have struggled a bit for crowds this season, but are now owned by the SEN Group, really successful company, really doing great things with that club, but getting bums on seats is still proving a challenge for them. So it's different in every market. It is, it's not a reflection of really of the clubs or the perception of how much money a club has. It really is indicative of the position of the team, where they sit, where their stadium is, what that looks like, the level of community engagement, maybe the level of success, although the Caps buck that trend, obviously. So it's a range of factors.
So this club here, obviously the Lynx, they've started with just over 1,100 in round one and it's dropped every single game. Since they are winning, they've been winning for many years. They've been in grand final 2 years ago. The crowds aren't really responding. I'm not sure about this location, whether it's great for people to get to. Like, where do you see them sitting at the moment, especially with their licence situation where no one really knows what's going to happen with them next season?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really disappointing that the crowds aren't coming out to see the Lynx in terms of how they're playing this season. And I suppose they've always been like that under Ryan Petrick as coach, but they're entertaining. They are entertaining in the style that they play and the quality of athletes they've got on their roster this year. Unbelievable, right? So great to watch. So we were really buoyed to see the crowds come out in that first round and watch them play. They've been really successful this season. They knocked off the Boomers last round, who were top of the table, playing great basketball. They should be in finals contention this year. So the crowd numbers probably are disappointing, and I'm sure the Lynx administrators would be disappointed that they're not actually being able to build and grow that crowd base. Look, no doubt they're working overtime on it to try and increase it. But yeah, it's a bit disappointing, but a bit of a surprise as well, considering they're doing so well and the quality of athletes they've got.
What are you planning for them to be from a licence perspective next year? It's under BA at the moment. There's no real knowledge about whether that will remain under BA or whether it'll be moved on or whether it'll be partially owned by two different entities. What are you expecting?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really us to say in terms of what we're expecting, as everybody knows that the licence, BWA have put forward the opportunity for the licence to be acquired or potentially to go into partnership with somebody on that licence. They're still working through that process. We obviously engage with them on that to touch base and see how things are tracking. So in terms of where that sits or how we expect it to sit, we're not really sure. It's really BWA at the moment owns the licence. It's really up to them to decide what they want to do with that licence at the end of the season. We obviously 100% want a team to be in Perth, as does BWA. We're all on the same page with that. It's just a matter of finding that right ownership space for the Lynx and how that pans out within the next kind of 6 to 9 months is still yet to be seen. So
the most important thing here is you're determined to have a team here regardless of what happens from an ownership perspective. You want a team permanently to be in Perth.
Absolutely, absolutely. It would be hugely detrimental to the league to not have a team in Perth, I think, and particularly for everyone in Western Australia who plays basketball. And that's why it's so important for fans to get out and see them. it's that thing where imagine if they weren't here, everyone would be up in arms. But then they've got to get out and show their support and get out and watch them play. So I really encourage people to do that.
So I must talk about a restructure of the league in some way, whether it's taken over by somebody else or whether Basketball Australia retains it or how it all works. Where do you see this league heading from a structure perspective?
Yeah, there's a lot of work going on in the background around the structure of the WNBL, and there's certainly, I can share with you what, you know, information is public about that and what that is. So Basketball Australia has engaged an external consultancy firm who are working with Basketball Australia and the club owners of the 8 clubs about what the structure of the league looks like in the future. The intent is that Basketball Australia will develop a company that sits external to Basketball Australia, say WNBL Co, whatever they call it. Basketball Australia will own a portion of that. Clubs will likely own a portion of that. It might be a 1% or a 2% of that company. All of that's still being worked through, and then they will be going out to seek private investment into that company. So there's a couple of things with that. The first is that seeking private investment to grow the WNBL is critical for its growth. We're 44 seasons in, and we've grown really nicely, slowly and steadily over that 44-year period with no real significant leaps. And we see other codes come in and have really big significant leaps, and it takes money to do it. That's just the reality of it, right? The money creates the resource that creates a whole, you know, ecosystem around that. So in terms of private investment into the league and bringing in some significant funding, you can't do that in the current model with Basketball Australia owning the league. You can't have a private investor saying, I want to own 20% at BA because it's an NSO, so it's not possible. So there's been a huge amount of work done this financial year, which is analysing the league, analysing structures of professional leagues, both in Australia and overseas, done by this consultancy. And then they've made a recommendation for this model, which has been endorsed by the BA board. It's supported by the clubs that are in the league at the moment. So what that will entail is, as I mentioned, that kind of entity that sits separately. It will, again, the governance structure still being worked through, it will likely be governed by a board or a commission, which will have a sole focus on growth and sustainability of the WNBL. So as it sits in present, as part of Basketball Australia, the Basketball Australia board is the highest level of oversight and governance for the league, but they have a million other things on their plate. So it certainly gets, you know, they tend to it, but it's not their sole focus. So having a dedicated group of people whose sole focus is the WNBL will be phenomenal, and having significant capital investment will provide, it's not going to be a magic bullet, it's not going to fix everything immediately, but it will certainly create what is needed for the league to take some leaps and bounds to be where it needs to be in terms of everything off the court. I think, you know, as you know, the quality of competition on court and the quality of athlete, world class. We're the best women's pro league in the country here in Australia in terms of how good we are on court. It's just everything around it that we need to elevate significantly. And my view, my personal belief is that this structure will enable us to do that.
When do you envisage that structure to be in place?
The plan is that it'll be in place before next season. So it's working along concurrently at the moment with the running of the current season. So the BA board and the club owners and the external consultancy group working through all elements of what is required to make that happen. And certainly the plan is that it will be put in place post this season, ready for next season.
So do you feel you have the appropriate person wanting to give you the money that's required to be that investor to take over from an ownership perspective?
Well, very interesting. The piece of work that's being undertaken at the moment is the valuation of the league, so determining what the league is worth. So let's pluck a number out of the air. Let's say the league's worth $50 million, and the determination is that they're going to sell off, I don't know, 30% or so. Let's say 50% for even numbers. It's $25 million, right? When this process started in January this year, we have been... pleasantly surprised, but quite surprised at the number of businesses, entities, individuals that have reached out and wanted to have meetings with us, with myself, Matt Scriven, various members of the BA board, to express their interest in buying into the WNBL. So the positive is there is no shortage of people that want to come in and get that 20 or 30% of the league, whatever that looks like. The challenge for the BA board, who are the ultimate, you know, I suppose, custodians of the league at the moment, is to find the right partner. It may not be a partner that has the biggest pockets, but it might be, let's say it's a broadcast partner who can say, right, well, there's X amount here, but also a package that comes with that might be, I don't know, every game on Channel 10 and broadcast and so on. So the challenge is finding the right partner who can absolutely help elevate the league to where it needs to get to.
Have you been disappointed with how the broadcast deal has worked out this year, given this agreement, given what happened last year? And it doesn't feel like it's as visible still as what it was when it was on KO and when it was available in other ways.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. When we did this broadcast deal, the two-year deal, which is the game of the week on ESPN and KO and the rest on Nine Now, the strong feedback from the fans was that they wanted more games above a paywall. So the year prior, as you know, on KO, pardon me, everybody who has KO knows that it's the place to go and watch sport, right? But not everybody does have KO. So part of that thinking was to provide as much opportunity for people to actually engage with the games without having to pay for it. So hence the Nine Now, I suppose, space. Interestingly, after last year, our fan survey, the fans said, we want it back on KO. So you can't keep everyone happy. So, and we disappointed? No, we're not disappointed. I think Nine as a network have increased their promotion of the league for us this year. They're promoting, they're running TVCs, they're, you know, running EDMs, they're doing social promotion. So they've increased their promotion of the league for us. ESPN have been fantastic, brilliant partner over the last two seasons. They promote WNBL everywhere. So obviously this is the second year of the two-year arrangement with both of those partners. We're already, I suppose, planning and in discussions about what the next broadcast deal will look like. It's kind of running a bit concurrently with this ownership model and structure as well. So timing-wise, it is kind of concurrent. We're not in a position to kind of share where we will be seen next year, but we've certainly taken into consideration and all of the feedback that's been received. So the fan feedback is obviously the most important thing, but certainly all the feedback from clubs, we've got feedback from athletes, various stakeholders in and around the league about where they think the league is positioned best. Look, in an ideal world, we're on a main channel on a free-to-air. That's where everyone wants to be because that's where you get the biggest eyeballs. Is that realistic for us right now? Probably not. It's where we'd like to be in 5 years' time, though.
So important for the league to have stars who are known everywhere. One of those is Lauren Jackson, who is known everywhere. You're still building the next wave of people who everyone recognises. Yeah. Lauren won't be coming to Perth this year because the game is on December 23 and she's worried about flight cancellations and has said she won't play because she wants to guarantee she's at home for Christmas. Sport around Christmas is part of life these days. Is that disappointing that you haven't been able to get the big name to be comfortable about coming and playing in what's an important match?
Yeah, I mean, look, I do understand Lauren's position. I know she has two young boys and she's a mum first and foremost and a you know professional athlete second these days. Certainly in her first iteration of playing, she was an athlete and a sole athlete, right? So I understand the position. I think like you, you know, the WNBL actually doesn't stop over the Christmas and, well, say the holiday period. Over that kind of Christmas New Year space when everyone is on holidays, we have two rounds of basketball. We pretty much only stop, I think, for the, you know, almost the public holidays. And even then we have a game on New Year's Eve up in Townsville, which is a regular fixture for them. So I think these days as a professional athlete, it's an expectation that you are playing, certainly in the WNBL, where with how our season runs across the summer period, that you play in those games. The NBL, they're playing on Christmas Day. I mean, they did it last year really successfully, and I think they got a doubleheader this year on Christmas Day. Look, we're not at that point. But yeah, I mean, I understand both sides. It is disappointing, I think, for the Perth fans especially. Everyone wants to see LJ play. They love watching her and love coming out to see her, and she definitely draws the crowds as well. So it is disappointing, but I do understand. We worked with the Lynx and the Flyers to, obviously the Flyers have a couple of mums in their team and there is some concern about that being close to Christmas. The game was moved earlier in the day, thanks to the Perth Lynx administration for kind of facilitating that. Again, that's not ideal for Perth either. So there was a bit of a finding some common ground there for that particular game. Look, it'll still be high quality. The Flyers have still got a great roster.
Do you know if the other mums are coming? Because they've got three of them, like there's Kelly and Leilani Mitchell as well. Will they all be here? Do you know yet?
Yeah. I have no idea. I would assume so. But who knows? I mean, there's lots of things that can happen between now and then, not just mums, injuries and all sorts of other things. The Flyers will no doubt be wanting to put their best foot forward and win that game. And I think, look, with how the Perth Lynx are playing this year, they're highly competitive. They're up the top there and thereabouts on the ladder. They'll want to make sure they get a win too. So, you know, I would expect all of them to be over here. And look, LJ may even change her mind. Who knows? Depends how badly they want to win that game.
Speaking of mums, we had Alex Cipitone on the Dribble last week and she talked about the little window within the free agency period where you're not contracted but suddenly you fall pregnant and you're not part of the current pregnancy and parenting policy, which meant that she didn't have any money coming in because she didn't want to lie to a club and say, I'm going to play for you and then sign up and say, by the way, I'm actually pregnant, I knew it the whole time. Is there a way of supporting athletes through that window if they fall pregnant then, or is it just the reality of being unlucky What can you do?
Well, I wouldn't call it being unlucky. I think...
Unlucky from a professional standpoint.
Yes. Professional standpoint, very lucky from a personal standpoint. It is a gap, right? So the WNBL is... The WNBL contracts are six-month contracts. The ideal scenario for us in the future, like let's look 5 years down the track, is that we have 12-month contracts and those athletes are paid appropriately and that they are supported throughout that 12-month period. At the moment, their contract starts at whatever it might be, 1st of October, and runs through for that six-month period. And when they are in that contract period, they're governed by the CBA and they're governed by the pregnancy policy. If they fall pregnant outside of that window, as Alex did, they actually aren't covered. It was brought up recently. We've just renegotiated a CBA for this current season, this 23-24 season. And the reason that was only done as a 1 year is because of this new structure that will be in place moving forward. And it has been flagged. It was flagged with us in this negotiation period about having to have some parameters around it and some more, I suppose, some more thinking and some thought around it, particularly for, and there's, you know, there is a couple of gaps in it. So Alex's case is where she wasn't contracted. There are athletes that have multi-year contracts and may fall pregnant in the off-season, but technically they're not contracted. So there is some gaps there that we need to tighten up. The aim of the league and the ABPA and the clubs, for that matter, we want to support our athletes, absolutely. So we just need to, it'll be reviewed in the next iteration of the CBA and have a look at how we can tighten that up a little bit and just make sure that we're providing the right level of support. We want women to feel like they can go and have children and come back and be able to play, and we want them to be supported in that process, both financially and otherwise. So there'll be a bit of work to be done on that pregnancy policy in this next iteration.
Sure, they'll all be extremely happy to hear about it. We mentioned that there's a couple of teams that are struggling at the moment. Last year we had the situation where Shyla Hill left Sydney mid-season and went and won a championship. Was there a review of that in the off-season? Is it possible at all for that to occur again this year, where a player, for any reason, leaves a club mid-year who is struggling and then goes to a team that isn't struggling?
Well, yeah, I mean, technically, yes, they can. So I'll explain to you a bit about what happened in that situation and then what the ruling is with it. So there is a cutoff date for when an athlete can sign with a club. They have to play a minimum number of games to then qualify for finals. I think off the top of my head, I think it's seven. I think that's it. So the cutoff date for the current season, I think, is the end of December. That then allows if an athlete signs at that point in time to play seven games to qualify for finals. So the scenario with Shyla last year was really unique, I suppose. It has happened before in the WNBL, but I think only once back many, many years. The only way it can really happen is if both player and club agree to mutually part ways. One or the other can't decide without it. So obviously it was a mutually agreed parting of ways in that Sydney scenario last year. Shyla then essentially becomes a free agent and can go and play for any club. And I know most clubs, I think, had a chat with her when kind of people were aware that that was actually going to be the case. There's no way, if we had said she cannot sign for another team, for us that would have been a restraint of trade, which is not right either. So really it was her decision about if she wanted to play in Australia. She had other opportunities to go over to Europe and play once she split from Sydney. She decided she wanted to continue playing in Australia and obviously went on to play with Townsville, who went and won the championship. Did she have an impact in that? Absolutely, right. She's a world-class player. So it's not an ideal scenario, I wouldn't say, but it is. It was all above board in terms of, you know, meeting all the criteria. It's not something we see regularly in the WNBL, but you see it a lot in other, certainly in other basketball leagues and in other codes, transfers and chops and changes. I think it's just because it's so rare in our league. There's a lot of questions asked of it.
Is I look at it and think, having seen the success Townsville have with it last year, if I'm fourth on the ladder this year, with 10 games to go, I'm raiding Canberra and saying, I want their best players, I'm offering them money, find a way to get out of that deal with them and come and play for us, is what I'd be doing if I was the club. And I'd be shocked if clubs weren't thinking that way because they've seen what can happen.
Yeah, but it just wouldn't happen. So that's a great example. So say the Lynx are third or fourth and Caps might be down the bottom there and they go, right, we want Jade Melbourne. They have to seek permission from Canberra to have a conversation with Jade, and Canberra can say yes or no. if it's Jade, they're definitely saying no. Even if it's another athlete, the high possibility of a club saying, yeah, sure, you can have a chat to my athlete and take my athlete for the back half of the season. It's not impossible, but it is highly, highly unlikely. So for a club to do that, they must approach the other club. They must seek permission to talk to or engage with that athlete in those conversations. Then if the club agrees to that, they can then approach the athlete and have the conversation. It's highly, highly unlikely, but it's not, it's within the rules if it were to occur.
It's good to see you over in Perth. I know your flight was delayed coming over here. It's fantastic. You don't get here all that often, given you are probably the busiest person going around in the sport at the moment, I reckon. So thank you very much for joining us on the Dribble Podcast.
Oh, you're very welcome. Always lovely having a chat.
A big thanks to Christy there. There is Opals news as well this week, with Lynx captain Annalee Maley named in the 20-player squad for the Olympic qualifying tournament in February. Ex-Lynx captains Darcy Garbin and Sammy Whitcomb are also in that squad. Australia will play Brazil, Germany and Serbia from February 8 to 11. So that's it for this week's episode of the Jewel Podcast. You can read all of your basketball news in the West Australian and at thewest.com.au. Thanks to Trevor Gleeson and Christy Collier-Hill for their time. Thanks to Josh Cable for his production work. Keep an eye out for that WWE interview with Rhea Ripley and Dominic Mysterio. February's going to be awesome. But before then, we will be back next week with another episode of the Dribble Podcast.